Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vanser, Ruven Hoffman, Bari Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, you know, we just released a Hebrew video about Tzipi Livni, whose real name is Tzipora Spitzer. Tzipora Spitzer was the foreign minister of Israel, and she may be the next prime minister of Israel. If the Labour Party wins, she and Buzi Herzog are going to be doing a rotation in the prime minister's office. Each is going to get 2 years as prime minister for the next 4 years. So she may be prime minister of Israel. And who is this individual who nearly became prime minister in the 2009 elections? She came very close. In fact, her party got more votes than the Likud party. But because of the way the coalition system works, she was unable to assemble a coalition. But she nearly became prime minister in 2009. And there's a chance, according to the polls, that she may become prime minister again. Who exactly is Tzipora Spitzer Tzipi Livni? And this should tell you about how crazy the Jews are after 2,000 years of exile. After 2,000 years of not having our own homeland. After 2,000 years of expulsions and persecution and pogroms and crusades and inquisitions, and of course the Holocaust being the culmination of all these persecutions. After 2,000 years of this, the Jews are simply not a normal people anymore. The Jews are crazy. And we in JTF are the national psychiatrists for the Jewish people. JTF is the national psychiatrist for Jews. JTF and its websites and its videos are the national couch for the Jewish people. That's our national couch. In any event, just to show you how crazy Jews are, Tzipi Livni, whose real name is Tzipora Spitzer, she was the foreign minister of Israel. She may be the next prime minister of Israel. She said that an Arab Muslim who murders Jewish soldiers is not a terrorist. That's not terrorism. Murdering Jewish soldiers is not terrorism, according to someone who may be the next prime minister of Israel and who almost became prime minister in 2009. It is not terrorism to murder Jewish soldiers. In fact, she said it's, quote, a more legitimate form of struggle, unquote. In other words, this is a legitimate form of struggle. You murder soldiers. Soldiers are not human beings. Soldiers are not Jews that have rights. You murder an Israeli soldier. This is a legitimate form of struggle. This is the person who may become the prime minister of Israel. By the way, just in case you think she says this about all groups of people in all situations, no! She has a completely different attitude toward Jews who commit acts that are illegal, quote-unquote illegal. When Jewish children, when Jewish teenagers spray paint graffiti as part of Tag Mechir, if they spray paint Kahana was right, or Arabs out, or some other slogan like that on a wall somewhere. If some Jewish kid, some 15-year-old Jewish kid spray paints Kahana was right. Kahana tzadak, Kahana was right. Or Aravim achutza, Arabs out. Some 15-year-old Jewish kid spray paints that, according to Tzipi Livni, according to Tzipora Spitzer, Tzipi Livni, that is terrorism. When a Jewish teenager or a Jewish minor spray paints on a wall Kahana was right, That is terrorism. That's terrorism. But when Arab Muslim Nazis murder Jewish soldiers in cold blood, that's not terrorism. That's a legitimate form of struggle. Now I ask you, can you get a self-hating Jew more disgusting than this? I mean, can you imagine in your wildest dreams that there'd be a more sick, evil, self-hating Jew than this? A more obvious traitor to the Jewish people than this? Someone who speaks like this? And this is someone who, according to the polls, is running close in the polls to become the next prime minister. Latest poll for Channel 10 News tonight. Latest poll for Channel 10 News in Israel shows that the Labour Party and the Likud are tied in the polls. Now, I don't like the Likud either. But I'm just making a point here that this is someone whom a lot of Israeli Jews are voting for. Very large percentage of Israeli Jews vote for this beast. Now, this individual, this mentally deranged, evil, self-hating creature, may become prime minister, God forbid. I'm not even allowed to step foot into Israel. Not only am I not a candidate for prime minister or for Knesset, I'm not even allowed to step foot into Israel. I'm not even allowed to visit for 19 years already. And this self-hating traitor beast may become prime minister? And she was the foreign minister? Buzi Herzog, the other, her partner in the Labour Party, who, according to the rotation, he's going to be prime minister half the time, she'd be prime minister half the time, according to their what they call their rotation agreement. And I'd like to say to them, rotate on this. But anyway, let's not get into that. Buzi Herzog, who is the other half of their little rotation agreement, he would be prime minister half the time, she'd be prime minister half the time under their agreement. Buzi Herzog said that he's against the concept of a Jewish state. He's against saying Jewish state because it's racist to say Jewish state. Arab state, there are 22 Arab states, that's okay. That's not racist to say Arab state. That's not racist against non-Arabs. That's fine. Muslim state, where there are 66 Muslim states, that's not racist or prejudice against non-Muslims. That's fine also, according to Buzi Herzog. But one tiny little Jewish state, that's racist. That we can't say, we shouldn't use the term Jewish state. That's not a good term to use. And these two, Buzi Herzog and Tzipora Spitzer, the two of them are running as the head of the Labour Party. They're going to be prime minister if the Labour Party forms the next government. That is what the Jewish people allow as to be their leaders. Now, I ask you, are the Jewish people in serious need of urgent psychiatric treatment? I ask you. I mean, is this a people in need of urgent psychiatric treatment? The answer is yes. We are the national psychiatrists for the Jewish people. We're their national couch, JTF. We're the only ones that tell the truth. The only ones that really tell the truth. We just did a video exposing both things that I spoke to you about. Buzi Herzog saying he's against the concept of a Jewish state. Tzipi Livni, Tzipora Spitzer, you know, whatever she calls herself, saying that the Arab Muslim Nazis that murder Jewish soldiers are not terrorists, but a Jewish kid who spray paints graffiti on a wall, he's a terrorist. These are Jewish anti-Semites. You see them in America. You see them all supporting Barack Hussein Obama and John Kerry and Hillary Clinton when they tell Israel to commit suicide. You see the Jews lead the campaign, the Jews in the news media, the Jews in Hollywood. They lead the campaign against Israel. They're the first ones to attack Israel. They're the first ones to stab their own people in the back. You see this all over the place. After 2,000 years of exile, the Jews are not normal. And they need us. They need us desperately. Desperately. To make them normal again. Because we represent what Jews are supposed to be. And you know, in this election, there's such a vacuum. None of the parties are telling the truth. None of them. None of them. Not one of them are telling the truth or standing for the truth. None of them. And here we are. I mean, here we are. The one group that tells the truth. And because I'm banned from Israel, we can't run in the elections. If we could run, by the way, we would be quite a sensation in the election. We would have a real shot at shaking things up if only I were in Israel. And you know, the reason I'm not in Israel, and the reason we're not running, and the reason we're in this situation is because we don't have a big enough budget. If we had a big enough budget and reached enough people, they wouldn't be able to keep me out. I guarantee you the politicians in the Likud and elsewhere would be under tremendous pressure if we had a big budget and they would let me in. And we would be running, and the situation would be a different situation. But because we're not in, this is what happens. This lunacy is what passes for Jewish leadership when we're not around. When we're not around to serve as the national psychiatrist and the national couch. I know that you are fellow JTFers, that you understand this, both Jews and Gentiles in our movement, you understand how essential it is that we bring our message to the Jewish people, that the message I just gave you should be given to the Jewish people in Hebrew, and we are bringing it to them in Hebrew on our videos. But unfortunately, we can't reach enough of them fast enough because of our lack of a budget. So we do what we can, we reach as many as we can. And the more help we get from you, and the more you help us, the more you cooperate with us and help us, and the more we work as a team, the more people we'll reach, the more people we will cure of this insanity of Jewish self-hatred. And of course, there are certain Jews that can't be cured of self-hatred. The Hollywood Jews, the news media Jews. I'm not speaking about them. I'm not talking about the Obama Jews. I'm not talking about, those mental defects. I'm talking about the fact that there are many Jews in Israel whom, if we reach them, would be convinced that what we're saying is sane and normal and logical, and why not give us a try for a change? A lot of Jews would say that. They would be saying that if we could reach them. Remember when we were on Facebook? 27,000. We got 27,000 likes, all from Israelis on our Hebrew page. All Israelis on our Hebrew page. 27,000 likes in just 3 months. You remember that? That's just the taste of what could be if we had a real budget. And we are reaching people. I mean, I just saw one of our videos that we did about the Arab terrorism. I just saw that we have 45,000 views on one of our videos. 45,000 views on Facebook. 45,000 Israeli Jews went to this Hebrew video. So, I mean, we do reach people. We do reach people. But obviously we have to do much more. And again, when I tell you all the things and I show you all the things that we've achieved, and you saw with your own eyes what happened on Facebook, 27,000 likes in 3 months, even though we have such a limited budget, when you see that, you know that the potential is there. You know that we're filling a vacuum. And you know that if that's what we do with such a limited budget, if we had a budget, a multi-million dollar budget, within 1 year, I'm telling you, within 1 year, we're a mass movement and we change Jewish history. You'll see. If it ever happens, God willing, you'll see that I'm right. In the meantime, we are not allowed to be silent, and we have to act like a national psychiatrist and a national couch, and you're part of our psychiatric effort to make Jews normal and sane again. You're part of that. You're helping. And God blesses those that bless the Jews and blesses those that bless Israel. So help us. When you see our videos, either in English or in Hebrew, like them, promote them, promote them all over the place. Help us spread the word on our videos. And join our great news pages. If you speak Hebrew, join our Hebrew news page and participate. If you don't speak Hebrew, you only speak English, then definitely join the English news page, jtf.org. jtf.org. The Hebrew news page is hayamin.org. 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 And in English, again, the page is jtf.org. It's a great news page with great articles. Shlomo's doing a wonderful job. Join the news page, sign up. And even if you don't sign up, you can still put comments on and vote in our polls and participate and tell people about it. Because we update our news page. We update our great news page. Shlomo really is the one doing that. He updates our news page 4, 5, 6, 7 times a day sometimes. Sometimes he puts a dozen new articles on every single day, a dozen new items. Things that you won't see in other places. You'll always learn something coming to our page. Every day you're going to learn something new. Every day you'll see, you'll learn something you didn't know about. And so will other people. So bring them to the page. JTF.org is the page. And of course, most importantly, we need your financial support. Those of you that have been supporting us generously on a regular basis, God bless you. You're doing something very important. Tens of thousands of people are getting our message. It's making a difference with them. And it's preparing the way for when eventually, someday, we're going to become a mass movement. It's only a matter of time. Eventually, someone's going to realize what we're saying is true and is going to give us the means to do what has to be done, or God is going to decide that our time has come. But we have to reach as many people as we can and do whatever and do what we can now to bring our message to the Jewish people. And so every check, every money order, every cash donation makes a big difference. Help us. Help us at this critical time. If you send checks, money orders, cash donations through the regular mail to our post office box, that is very, very helpful to us. Every donation makes a difference. Or if you prefer, because it's more convenient, to donate online, you can do so with your credit card by just clicking on the donate button at the top of our Hebrew main page. It's on our Hebrew main page, but you see the word donate in English. Click on that button. It's on hayamin.org on the top, and you can conveniently make a donation to us online. Either way, whether it's online or whether it's sending a check, money order, or cash donation through the mail, makes no difference to us. It's very, very important, very helpful to us. God bless the great JTFers who are helping us, and everybody, let's decide how can you help us more? What else can you do to make a difference to help us more? Think about that, because it's important, because that's really why we're in this world. We're in this world to do what God commands us to do. That means to help our families and to help the people we love, and also to help Israel and the Jewish people. God demands that of us as well. It's very, very important. It's part and parcel of our very existence, of the air we breathe. So help bring the national psychiatrist, the national couch, to the Jewish people, because it's long overdue. Okay, let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers. Let me just make sure everything's okay over here. Yes, I think so. Baruch Hashem, thank God. And we start off with Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what are your thoughts on the following people? Pink, Bruno Mars, Eminem, and Vanilla Ice. All scum, don't you agree?" Unquote. Oh, absolutely, they're all scum. Let's see, the little I know, I don't know that much about everybody, but the little that I do know, Pink is a degenerate so-called singer who supports homosexual marriage and leftist causes. Bruno Mars is a so-called singer, arrested for cocaine use, another degenerate, another one, same thing. His paternal grandfather, by the way, Bruno Mars, his paternal grandfather, by the way, was Jewish. Shows you the consequences of intermarriage. Eminem, that's white scum who wants to be a black rapper. You know, you have white people that would like to be black because blacks have such a great superior culture. They're so brilliant that they're white people who would prefer to be black, you know, who think that the culture of Africa, of the jungles of Africa, is superior to the culture of civilized people. So they want to be black. So Eminem wants to be a black rapper. His dream is to become black, to transform himself into a black person. He's a complete lowlife. He's a long-time drug addict. He's been addicted to prescription drugs and other drugs. I mean, just a long-time drug addict, just the scum of the earth. Vanilla Ice, that's a white so-called rapper who also wants to be black. Here we go. Here we go again. Another mental case. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. We go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you believe in the miracles that Moses predicted, like parting the Red Sea? Thanks," unquote. Well, Moses didn't predict these things. They happened. These things actually happened. Of course I believe in it. Of course I believe. If God created the Red Sea, he can't part the Red Sea. Of course I believe that happened. You know, the miracles that are spoken about in the Bible, when Moses is telling the Jewish people in the Bible about this, he can't make this up. Huge number, 600,000 Jewish men from the ages of 20 to 60, just the men were 600,000, saw this with their own eyes. If Moses was saying, "You remember when we left the Red Sea and all this happened?" If he was saying this and this hadn't happened, they would say, "Hey, wait a minute. I don't remember that. What are you talking about?" And the Bible hasn't changed for thousands of years. It hasn't. And Jews wouldn't allow it to change. Jews would not allow the Bible to change. You go to a synagogue, and if the person reading from the Torah makes one little mistake on one little word, or one, the whole synagogue right away corrects him. If there's one letter that's wrong, or one word that's wrong, in a Sefer Torah, the whole Sefer Torah in the synagogue is invalid. The Torah scroll, Sefer Torah is a Torah scroll. The whole thing is invalid. That's why the wording and what it says in our Torah, our Tanakh, for thousands of years, the same thing for the Jews of Yemen as for the Jews in Poland and for the Jews in Russia and for the Jews in Morocco and the Jews all over the world in countries, completely different cultures. Yet The word of the Bible and the word of the Torah in Hebrew remained the same for thousands of years with all these different cultures and all these different influences and all these different pressures and Holocausts and Inquisitions and Crusades and everything that happened. And still, one thing never changed. The words of the Torah and the words of the Tanakh in Hebrew kept by the Jewish people remained the same in all of these different countries. All the Jews of the world, in Yemen and in Poland and in Germany and in Spain and in Morocco and all these other countries, United States, all the other countries that Jews have lived in for thousands of years, all of them celebrate Pesach. All of them. How's that possible? They were completely separated at a time when we didn't have internet or telephones or communication or any means of communication. And yet, separate, completely separated, they still celebrate the same holidays, believe in the same faith, say very similar prayers. The prayers, there are some varieties in this, in how the prayers are said, but the Bible and the Torah is all the same. That really did happen. We did have great miracles in the land of Egypt. And when we left Egypt, we had the ten plagues really happened, and the parting of the Red Sea really happened. Those things really happened. And we really were fed manna, or in Hebrew, man, from heaven by God during the 40 years that we wandered in the Sinai. Those things really happened. And if we had faith and were good Jews and did what we were supposed to do, type of things like that would happen again. Thank you, Joe. We go now to Truth Seeker, who writes, and I quote, "What do you think of the Iranian terrorist news network Press TV? Their obsessive fixation with Israel is interesting," unquote. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Press TV, the Iranian terrorist, you're right, it's the Iranian terrorist news station. You know, one of the people interviewed on the Iranian Muslim Nazi terrorist news station, which, by the way, calls for a Holocaust against the Jewish people, denies that the Holocaust of 80 years ago, 70, 80 years ago, took place. They deny that 6 million Jews were murdered by the Nazis. But they call for a Holocaust now against the Jews. Anyway, Ron Paul was interviewed. Remember we did a video showing Ron Paul's interview? Ron Paul was interviewed on that station, and he compared Israel to the Nazis and said that Gaza's like a concentration camp. He defended Arab terrorists and said, they're just throwing homemade bombs. They're resisting with homemade bombs. You remember that? Ron Paul, Rand Paul. What a bunch of Nazis. Thank you, Truth Seeker. And we go to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, "Rakisha Burns is a Phoenix Negro who raped her own infant son with a sex toy," unquote. Okay, yeah, because I didn't know last week who this was. You asked me about her, and I didn't know who this was. So she raped her son with a sex toy. Okay. True example of black motherhood. And Lewinsky Stinks writes, "Spare the Nation was the armed terror wing of the African National Congress." Okay, thank you. I forgot about that. Yes. Now that you're refreshing my memory, I do remember that. Yes. But last week I forgot about it. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, "Discuss W.E.B. Du Bois, the dishonorable Elijah Muhammad, the maladorious New York Nazi Times Negro, and Ice Cube." Okay, let's do them one at a time. W.E.B. Du Bois, who is honored and glorified and idolized in the universities and everywhere you learn about what a great black he was an open member of the Communist Party. He was a black racist communist and an open member of the Communist Party. And just a vicious, evil, black racist agitator. But just like today, you see Al Sharpton is idolized. All the black racists and anti-Semites are idolized today. Same thing with him. Elijah Muhammad. His predecessor was Wallace Fard, who was actually white. They don't admit that because they hate all whites. And Wallace Fard hated whites. But he was really white, Wallace Fard, the founder of the Nation of Islam, the predecessor of Elijah Muhammad, the founder of the Nation of Islam, which is now run by Louis Farrakhan. The actual founder was a white guy named Wallace Fard. And he was murdered eventually. He disappeared. He disappeared. Everybody knows he was murdered like all the other, like they all slaughter each other. Anyway, he was murdered, of course, and disappeared, quote unquote. And Elijah Muhammad, after he disappeared, said that he was Allah on earth. That he was actually Allah incarnate.
Yeah. Allah came in the world, and he would, that was Allah. He come on the earth, and he was on the earth to speak to his people, the black nation. Mm-hmm.
And of course, Elijah Muhammad, aside from saying that Wallace Fard was Allah on earth, he calls all whites devils, even though the founder of his own organization, his own movement was white. He calls all whites devils, and he calls for Nazi genocide. He says that all whites must be exterminated, and the Jews in particular should be exterminated. That was Elijah Muhammad, who is now honored and spoken. And now they speak about him like he was a civil rights leader. Okay, the New York Nazi Times Negro. What happened was, it was, I was walking by the New York Nazi Times building, and I noticed this homeless, extremely smelly black man outside of the New York Nazi Times building, talking to himself, just, you know, doing the usual thing. And you know, he was very, very, very terrible odor around him. And I don't know, he was about 10 or 15 feet away from the entrance to the building. I said to him, I said, what are you standing out here? I said, go inside to the building and, you know, tell people you're against racism and that they shouldn't be racist and, you know, and that you want to stay in the building because you're against racism. You know, tell them, you know, you don't want them to be, you know, and I told him with an Ebonics accent. I said, you go inside there, you tell them white people, you know, they be racist. You tell them you have a right to remain in that building. You should not be homeless when they be making millions of dollars. You go in there and tell them white people. Anyway, so he went in. So, you know, after I encouraged, he went in the building. And you see all the reporters and all the people were standing in the lobby all go running out. They couldn't take the smell. They all go running out or running. They go running into the elevators. They go running out of the lobby. They go running outside or they run outdoors. They all go running out. They couldn't take the smell. You know, and they didn't know what to do with him. And he refused to leave. And I told him, don't leave. I said, do not leave. You don't have to leave. And he, you know, he stayed in there. And you know, and finally, you know, the security guards wanted to remove him. Of course, all the security guards are black. So security guards said that he has to go, but they didn't want to touch him. They didn't know exactly how to do it because he was so dirty and nasty and had stuff all over his body. You know, they didn't want to actually touch him. So they, you know, they went and they got gloves and they finally, you know, and they were asking him to leave. They didn't want to physically throw this black man out because of the New York Nazi Times. You know, they support, they worship blacks. You can't do that. You know, the masthead of the newspaper should have a homeless black on the cover. Idi Amin should be on the cover of the New York Nazi Times on their masthead because, I mean, they worship blacks. Anyway, so I don't know what happened. I was there and they were trying to convince him to leave. He was refusing to leave and I couldn't stay any longer. But I was actually there for a while and watched this going on for, I don't know, about 15, 20 minutes. I was there watching, enjoying this, you know, and nobody could go in there. Nobody could go near there. And the guards were trying to get him to leave. They were at a distance. They couldn't even go near him because of the smell. It was just unbelievable. So anyway, I thought it was a nice little gift that I gave to the New York Nazi Times. And Lewinsky Stinks wants me to discuss Ice Cube. Oh, here's another black racist rapper. He'd be a rapper. Mm-hmm. Another rapper. He's a black racist Muslim who supports Farrakhan, by the way. He's a black Muslim, supports Farrakhan. And, of course, all of his so-called music, it's not music, it's just chanting of the jungle while swinging from trees. They chant filthy obscenities, you know, from the jungle. Anyway, so this low-life, mentally retarded, single-digit IQ piece of subhuman filth, he's a very wealthy rapper now. And he calls himself a Muslim and a supporter of Farrakhan. Ice Cube. Mm-hmm. And finally, Lewinsky Stinks writes, compare black Islam and black Judaism, in quotes. Well, black Islam is just another form of, you know, all of Islam is hatred. I mean, the whole religion is filled with hatred. So they just created their own little branch of hatred, adding race to it, making it so that only blacks can be Muslim brothers. Mm-hmm. You know, they just made their own little branch of a religion filled with hatred anyway. Is it really that much of a departure that Farrakhan says all whites should be exterminated? Muhammad, the founder of Islam, says all non-Muslims should be exterminated? You know, I mean, come on. Why fight over little differences in nuance? And black Judaism in quotes, quote unquote. Well, do you mean the black Hebrews and the others that claim to be Jews? You know, you know, it's always interesting to see a people that has no history try to steal the history of everyone else. That's basically what it is. They have no religion. They have no history. They used to worship rocks and human excrement and make idols out of human excrement and rocks and stones in Africa and dance around rocks and stones, you know, while wiping the flies off of their face. And they decided that that's not good enough. So they want to, they claim they were the original Jews and they were the original Egyptians and they were the original everything. Yeah, right. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Christians for Jews, who writes, and I quote, "What do you think of Clint Eastwood's film American Sniper Success and your opinion on Chris Kyle? Thanks," unquote. I don't know everything about Chris Kyle, but he certainly was an American hero. He went, volunteered to fight for his country, and apparently killed more of the enemy than anyone else has done in history, just in terms of doing it as a sniper. So he clearly was a very, very brave American soldier and an American hero. So obviously we have to admire and respect him for his heroism and his commitment and his devotion to his country. I haven't seen the film American Sniper. I know that there's criticism from all ends, so I want to reserve judgment on that. I have not seen that film, so I don't want to make a statement, because I may not like it if I see it. There may be things that are politically correct. There may be other problems in it. I don't know. Or maybe it's very good. I have no idea. I have no idea. So that I don't want to make any comment on. But Chris Kyle is certainly a hero. And anybody who punches Jesse Ventura in the face in a bar is even more of a hero. Now, Jesse Ventura sued him and said that he said all types of things about him that weren't true, and he's suing the estate. I have a feeling that Chris Kyle did exactly to Jesse Ventura what he said he did. I have a feeling. When it comes to trusting someone like Chris Kyle, who's an American hero, as opposed to trusting someone like Jesse Ventura, who's a lying, vile, Ron Paul, Rand Paul, libertarian, Jew-hating piece of garbage, piece of subhuman garbage, who believes in the 9/11 conspiracy theories and the Alex Jones, Ron Paul, lunatic theories. You know, comparing this and whose whole life he was with, you know, he was with the rigged wrestling. He was a rigged. I mean, how did he become famous? He became famous, Jesse Ventura, as a wrestler. Eventually, he became governor of Minnesota, which is no compliment to the people of Minnesota that they actually elected him for one term to be their governor. But he was in wrestling, and everybody knows that that's all rigged. So his whole life, Jesse Ventura's whole life, is a lie. So if there's a dispute between Chris Kyle and Jesse Ventura on the facts, you know, my bet is on Chris Kyle, the American hero. Thank you, Christians for Jews. And we go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "One, Lord Resistance Army, true Christians are typical Negro savages," unquote. You know, I don't know. I know that they're fighting Muslims in Africa, which is good. It's a black African army. They're fighting Muslims in Africa. They're also accused of doing terrible things, raping and murdering and doing things which, unfortunately, we're very familiar with, those of us that live near certain neighborhoods in New York City and in other big cities in urban America are very familiar with that type of behavior. So, you know, whether or not that's happening on a massive scale, if they're doing that on a massive scale and committing those atrocities, then of course it's terrible. So I just don't know. I don't know if they're being smeared or if this is true, or I don't know enough. I haven't studied the issue enough to give you a definitive answer, Smash Islam. Sorry. Two, Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma is the president of South Africa. Okay. He was, of course, a terrorist in the African National Congress. You can't get elected president of South Africa unless you're a terrorist in the ANC. He was an open member of the Communist Party of South Africa, joined the Communist Party. He's a rapist. He was arrested and charged with rape even by the black South African courts, but they ended up dropping the charges under pressure and threats and intimidation from Zuma's terrorist supporters. But, you know, he's a rapist. There's no question about that. And, of course, he's a racist and an anti-Semite who favors destroying America and Israel. You know, the usual third world jealousy and anti-Semitism and racism. In other words, put the picture together: rapist, murderer, terrorist, Communist Party member, jealous, ignorant, vile, ugly. Perfect to be president of South Africa. Just the perfect president for South Africa. And now Smash Islam writes, 3, Joe Slovo. Joe Slovo is a self-hating Jew who was the leader of the South African Communist Party for many, many years. He was also a member of the ANC. He joined the African National Congress. This is a white Jewish guy from Latvia, Lithuania. I don't remember if it's Latvia or Lithuania, but he's from one of the Baltic states. A self-hating white Jew runs the Communist Party of South Africa for decades, and joins the African National Congress, an organization committed to the destruction of Israel and the Jewish people, committed to the destruction of his own people. So, what can I say? How can it get any sicker than that? 4, Smash Islam writes, curse Jemima Khan, Yimach Shma V'Zichra. Jemima Khan, for those of you who don't know, was a British journalist. Her paternal grandfather was Jewish. So she's not Jewish, but her paternal grandfather was Jewish. And she decided to marry a Pakistani Muslim, converted to Islam. Absolutely, I'll curse her. Yimach Shma V'Zichra Shem Reshayim Yirkav. May her name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. Absolutely, she deserves to be cursed. A white British journalist whose paternal grandfather was Jewish, and she decides to convert to Islam, marries a Muslim and converts to Islam. And finally, 5, Lil Jon. Lil Jon is another retarded black rapper. Need I say more? Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to Chabad Kahanes, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, I dislike Marzel as much as you do. However, he did claim that after the elections, once he is an MK member of Knesset, he is splitting from Yishai and going into the opposition, unquote. Yeah, I'm well aware of that, Chabad Kahanes, but you know, if someone votes for his party, even if you like Marzel, okay, and I don't like him, you know, he said that I'm not really banned from Israel, said all types of terrible things about me, but even if you like Marzel, for whatever reason, you get him. It's true. If you vote for his party, he will be in the Knesset as one member, just one member. He got one spot on the Knesset list. But you're also voting to put in 4 or 5 leftists with him. He joined with outright leftists. You know that Eli Yishai said, yes, Oslo, yes, Arafat, yes, expelling the Jews from Hebron. Eli Yishai was a lifelong leftist, a strong supporter of Oslo, strong supporter of Shimon Peres, strong supporter of the Gilad Shalit deal, where over a thousand Muslim terrorists were released. And he was pushing and pressuring Netanyahu the whole time to release even more. He kept threatening to leave Netanyahu's coalition unless Netanyahu did more for what he called the peace process. Eli Yishai said in an interview with Haaretz, when Harav Ovadia was still alive, Harav Ovadia and I support the peace process, even though most of our voters are against it, our own constituencies against it, but we, despite that, are so committed to the peace process, we continue to support the peace process and demand that Netanyahu take steps toward peace, quote unquote. This is the person that Baruch Marzel decides to run with for the Knesset? I mean, you know, I guess you can run, he could also run with the Communist Party for the Knesset and say, well, look, as long as if they get in, at least I'll get a seat. In other words, just to get a seat, he's willing to put all these leftists in, all these people with this terrible history. I'm not buying it, Chabad Kahanist. I don't think it's a deal that should have been made. I'm not buying it. Sorry. Okay. And so, I mean, you don't, you know, when you vote for him, You're voting for the party in Israel. You vote for a party. So you're putting in four or five people there. You're not just putting in Marzel. Marzel's just one person. You're putting in four or five people, and all the other people in that party are terrible people. All the other people in that party are very bad people. Very bad people who betrayed the Jew. Shetbun and these other guys who were with the Yeshiva Council, they betrayed the Jews in Gush Katif. I mean, they're all bad people. Every one of them are bad. And so Marzel's willing to run with them and willing to put them in the Knesset just so he could get a Knesset seat for himself. Would Rabbi Kahana do something like that? I don't think so. In fact, I know he wouldn't. Thank you, Chabad Kahanist. I wouldn't vote for that party. If I were in Israel, I would not vote for that party. That's just my opinion. We go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, why does God give us only 6,000 years until Mashiach, unquote. Mashiach being the Messiah, of course. Because the Jewish concept is that one day is like 1,000 years in the eyes of God, and that means, Chazal teach us, that means that all the 6 days of creation, days, they weren't literally days, but they were really periods of time. But anyway, all the 6 days are like 1,000 years, and at the end of the 6,000-year period, we have the seventh day, Shabbat, which represents the Geulah, which represents the redemption. All this is symbolism, but it represents what actually is going to happen historically. And God brings an end to all the suffering and all the pain and all the agony that we have to go through in this world in order to bring the final, beautiful, magnificent world that God wants to give us. The first 2,000 years of the world, we're taught, were tohu vavohu. Tohu vavohu means complete chaos. In other words, there was no Torah, there was no truth, everybody was saying lies. Sounds like the Israeli Knesset today. But no truth, all lies, everything bad for the first 2,000 years. Then the next 2,000 years, Avraham Avinu comes into the world. Abraham, our father, comes into the world. He was born in the year 1948 on the Jewish calendar, 1948. In other words, 1,948 years after the Jewish calendar started running. And finally, roughly 2,000 years in, at the age of 52, when he was 52, at the 2,000 years, he starts going around and telling people about the truth of God, and there's only one God, and, you know, he was the only one in the world. Everybody else believed in idols in his generation. Finally, we saw the beginnings of Torah. So for 2,000 years, we have the age of Torah, where you have prophets, and you have people like Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, people like Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, and other great leaders. For 2,000 years, we have that. Okay, King David, and great kings, and the temples. So it's 2,000 years of the first 2,000 years of the world were tohu vavohu, in other words, chaos, anarchy, without Torah, without truth, just darkness. The next 2,000 years are Torah, where we have prophecy, we have the temples, we have great Jewish leaders and great people in the world, but most of the world still chooses evil. And then the final 2,000 years are called the 2,000 years of the Mashiach, which means Yemei HaMashiach, the days of the Mashiach, where the Mashiach isn't in the last 2,000 years, but we have all the preparation for bringing the Mashiach and where the Mashiach can come. And we're toward the end of that 6,000-year period, and when the 6,000 years are up, we believe that the Mashiach will come. We believe that will be the end of that'll be the time, and that's how Hashem, God, has scheduled things. That's his desire, and he believes that will be the right time. The Mashiach will come even if people are not deserving. He will come eventually for God's name's sake. But if he comes when we're not deserving, that means it'll come after a lot of suffering, a lot of pain. It takes much longer. Most people won't survive. Be a terrible nightmare. If on the other hand, he comes because we do believe and we do turn to him and we do the right things, then he comes without immediately, quickly, without pain or suffering, gloriously, magnificently, and it's a whole different situation. Dr. Dan now writes, too, your thoughts on vaccinations and people who are against them, unquote. Vaccinations are absolutely essential. And the risk of getting some complication from a vaccination, anything you do in life has some risk. Anything you do in the physical world that we live in is going to have some risk. But the chances of you having a complication from a vaccination are so minute compared to the benefits that you get from vaccination. You remember, I mean, of course, this is before our time, but we had polio. Millions of people were crippled by polio. Millions of people. I mean, vaccinations wiped out polio. Vaccinations have saved millions of lives. Well, you've got to be crazy to come out against vaccinations. And when someone like Rand Paul makes statements as a doctor, quote unquote, attacking vaccinations or putting doubt on it and giving spinning conspiracy theories into it, he's endangering people's lives. I'm not saying that we shouldn't question medical science and modern science. We should always have questions. We should always be inquisitive, and you don't trust somebody just because they're a doctor. You don't trust them. Doctors can be wrong, too. Doctors are human beings. But to completely reject something that has proven by medical science to have been very beneficial to humanity and to put us back in the Stone Age is crazy. That's crazy. And I'm the first one, by the way. I'm the first one who believes in health and healthy eating and good lifestyle and other things that doctors for many years didn't tell you to do. I'm the first one that will tell you that we should do natural, we should eat only healthy, and we should have good diets, and we should, you know, that we should do these other things which medical research proves is good for you. But I'm the first one to say that. And the first one to say that many people take too much medicine and too many pills. There is also another problem. People over-medicate, and some people don't need any medicine and take it. I mean, that's also a problem. There's no question about that. The natural things are better than if you have to use something artificial. But when we have real diseases and real problems, and we invent something, God gives us the knowledge, miraculously gives us the knowledge to invent something to save our lives, we should certainly take advantage of that. We shouldn't reject things that are proven by medical science to be helpful. Dr. Dan now writes, so I'm definitely in favor of vaccinations. Absolutely. Dr. Dan now writes, 3, thoughts on the Marzel Yishai deal, unquote. Well, I think I actually answered that, Dr. Dan, in the previous question from or comment from Chabad Kahanist. I'm not comfortable with that deal. I think it's a bad deal. I think that Marzel has entered into an agreement with leftists and people who were very, very bad for the Jewish people, Shas people. Yishai is bad news. He was a leftist. And I didn't know this, by the way. I did not know this when several weeks ago on a show, I thought that this would be, that possibly it would be a good idea if Yishai ran, for instance, with Moshe Feiglin. And I actually attempted to push that deal. I actually communicated with Yishai and tried to push that type of deal. And I was in communication with Yishai and with Moshe Feiglin, with others, because I didn't know the extent of his history. I did not know that he was just as bad as Aryeh Deri, just as much of a leftist. I was not aware of this. But now that I know, I know that Baruch Marzel did know about this when he entered, because people showed him this, you know, before he entered into this agreement, and didn't stop him and didn't bother him. And I think that's a problem. I think it's a problem. I would not vote for that party, considering the other members of the party and their history. I think their history proves that they're not good for the Jewish people. Yishai and Yoni Shetbun and the other people running in that party have a very bad history, as far as the land of Israel, as far as the Temple Mount, as far as issues that are of major importance to us. Thank you, Dr. Dan. We're going now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, your opinion of Bridget Gabrielle, unquote. I like Bridget Gabrielle. I think she's a courageous Lebanese Christian woman. And I think a lot of what she says, I think she tells the truth. I like her. I like her, and I think she's telling the truth about Islam and telling the truth about what really happens in the Middle East, what happened to her own family. And I like and admire her, and she doesn't back down, even though she's been threatened and all types of things have happened, and they call her all types of names. I admire and respect her. Thank you, Chicago Jew. We go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, what did you think of the Carmelite Haifa subway? You know, Haifa in English is actually Haifa. In Hebrew, we say Haifa. So we'll have little Hebrew lessons maybe on some of the shows every week. It's Haifa in Hebrew. And what did I think of the Carmelite? It is clean and efficient and was a very nice subway. It's a small subway, says it's relatively small compared to New York subway, but I actually liked it. I actually liked traveling on Haifa subway. I thought it was clean, it was nice, the trains were on time, and I actually enjoyed it. It was way better than the horrible New York subway system. New York subway system is the pits. Benjamin now writes, one, where did you take it to? Unquote. I don't remember the stop, but I know that we had to visit, we had a meeting, we had to visit with somebody who lived in Haifa, and so we took the subway to their house. And to their apartment. I remember going to their apartment and with somebody else. I went with somebody else because I didn't know, you know, I don't know Haifa. I mean, I guess I could have found it by myself, but it was easier this way. So I went with somebody else who, someone, an Israeli who lives in Israel. And we went and we took the subway. He said, you want to take the subway? You'll see. And I said, yeah. I said, why not? And I don't remember the stop, but I remember it was a nice trip. Three. Did you see the Haifa Zoo at the upper last stop, Gan Ha'em Station? Unquote. No, I never went to the Haifa Zoo, and I don't remember. Again, I don't remember what stop we got off at, so I don't know if it was Gan Ha'em. I don't know what the station was that we got off at. I don't remember. This is Benjamin. This is 21 years ago. Okay, this is the last time I was able to get into Israel and actually travel around was 21 years ago. So that's a long time ago. I just don't remember. Benjamin now writes, four, it must have been nice to be on a subway with no affirmative action activity, unquote. Yes, it certainly was. I didn't even see Arabs on the subway. I didn't see them. Now there probably are loads of Arabs on there now because Haifa now has become infested with Arabs. But at the time, I didn't see any Arabs on there. Everything was clean and nice and running nicely, and it was very nice. Thank you, Benjamin. We go now to Nekama, who writes, and I quote, one, if occupied Jordan can execute terrorists, why can't pathetic Israel? Jews are sick, unquote. Absolutely, Nekama. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, Nekama, the Jews are afraid to do it because they want to show the world how nice they are, how progressive and enlightened they are. Look at how many people respected and praised Jordan when they did that, even though Jordan's an evil country too. But and it's a country that, as you say, occupied Jordan. It's an artificial country, has no right to exist. It's actually part of the land of Israel. But people respect when someone stands up and is strong. People respect that. Respect that. The Jews think that if they're strong and tough and do what has to be done, that they're going to be condemned. They will be condemned. But at least they'll be respected. Now they're condemned and people laugh at them and people have contempt for them. They don't understand that you can't win respect unless you have self-respect. No one will respect someone who has no self-respect. And the Jews have no self-respect. The fact that the Jews don't immediately give the death penalty to all Arab terrorists, I shouldn't say immediately, first we should torture them and get whatever information we can get out of them so that we can better fight against the cancer that they represent. But after we get all the information that we've gotten, that we could have gotten out of them, we should execute all of them. That's what we should be doing. And I got news for you. The world would respect that. They could condemn all they want, but people would respect that. They would know that you don't mess with the Jews and you don't mess with Israel. Nekama now writes, too, I think Mashiach will have to wipe out most Muslims, unquote. There's no doubt. I mean, Mashiach will have to wipe out, first of all enemies of the Jewish people will be wiped out. Anyone who is against the Jewish people or against Israel will be destroyed. It will have no place in the next world. There's no question about that. Thank you, Nekama. We go now to Mensch, who writes, and I quote, ISIS's publicizing its atrocities not to demoralize the West, but to elate the Muslim majority. Barbarism appeals to their carnal desires and brings recruits, unquote. Absolutely. Manch, you see things and understand things. I wish we had leaders in Israel that could see and understand the way you can, but you clearly understand the true nature of what we're up against. You're absolutely correct. You really do. You really get it. You get it. You understand what's going on. That is very, very true. Thank you, Manch. And now to South Korean Zionist, who writes, and I quote, Chaim discussed JTF strategy. Is JTF stronger or weaker since it lost its Facebook page, unquote. Okay, let's deal with that first. Of course we're weaker. Of course. The Facebook page was very helpful to us. We were reaching tens of thousands of people. Every single video we did was getting tens of thousands of views when we had that Facebook page, when we had gotten to our peak of strength. Of course we're weaker. Of course we're weaker. What can we do? You know, that's their policy there. That's the politically correct policy there. But of course it was a blow to us, obviously. South Korean Zionist now writes, also bless the national unproductive day of the Super Bowl, unquote. Oh, I agree with you completely. I mean, you know, the idolization of sports like football, basically watching 80% of the people, 80% of the football players are blacks, you know, playing against other blacks, and whites grow up worshiping these blacks. And it's part of the mental decay and the mental degeneration that is taking place in Western society for decades now. It's very, very bad. There's no question it's very bad. And just think of how many people devote their lives. I mean, we're in this world for such a short period of time. And in this world, during our lifetime, we decide our destiny for eternity. And people, in the short period of time that God gives you in this world, where you determine what your eternal destiny will be, people devote their lives to deciding who's going to catch a ball and who's going to score a touchdown or who's going to score a goal in a soccer game or who's going to win in a basketball game. This is what people devote their lives to? Adults running around after a ball all day and people going nuts. Oh, he got the ball. No, he didn't get it. Oh, you know, and this is what they devote their lives to? It's absurd. It's absurd. And I'm in favor of sports. I'm in favor of people playing sports because it's healthy, because it's good for the body. I favor sports for the body, both sitting on TV and watching for hours, and especially eating all the junk that people eat when they watch these games. Sitting and watching, and this is what, there's no benefit to watching other people play. If you yourself, I used to love playing baseball. If you yourself play sports for exercise in order to give your body the exercise that you need, that's good. But to watch other people and to worship these evil teams and evil players, it's insanity. It's complete insanity. Thank you, South Korean Zionist. We go now to Papercut, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, 1, pray for my relatives. 2 aunts died and 1 cousin with bone cancer in the last 3 weeks, unquote. Papercut, I am so sorry to hear about that. I'm really, really sorry to hear about that. May both of your aunts have eternal life. Aleihen HaShalom, which means they should rest in peace. May they have eternal life. May God have mercy on their souls and give them eternal life and give them only the best and all the rewards of the next world, God willing. Bezrat Hashem, God willing. And as far as your cousin with bone cancer, I hope he has a refuah shlema, a complete recovery, a complete and speedy recovery, and should be completely cured of that terrible disease, God willing. Papercut now writes, 2, why did you never become a rabbi, unquote? Just because I'd have to take a lot of time off of my activities for a year or two to do that. Becoming an Orthodox rabbi, a truly Orthodox rabbi, is not some easy thing. And I would have to take time off, a lot of time off, and study all types of things. And it would be for a year or two, I'd have to take a lot of time off of my activities. And I just haven't been able to pull myself away because no one else, if other people were taking up what I was doing, it would be a different story. But unfortunately, I don't see that. So I haven't been able to pull myself away to do that. Thank you, Papercut. And now, Surgical Jew writes, and I quote, Bobby Jindal recently said in the United Kingdom about Muslim no-go zones in Europe. He was widely panned by the media. Your opinions on this and on Bobby Jindal, unquote. Yeah, obviously Bobby Jindal told the truth. There's no question that there are Muslim no-go zones in Europe. No question about it. In every Muslim country. It's European countries, someday we're going to be saying every Muslim country. But there's no question that does take place. And Of course, the Muslim-loving, lying news media naturally attacked him for it. On that particular issue, I think he was right, and I think he told the truth, and he got attacked for it. Absolutely. My opinion on Bobby Jindal, I don't know enough to really give a full opinion on him. You know, he's the governor of Louisiana. I don't think he has a realistic chance of I don't think he has a realistic chance next year of becoming president. I would prefer that he not run because he takes votes away from Ted Cruz and takes, you know, splits up the vote of the people that may have a slight chance. Even Ted Cruz only has a slight chance, but at least he has some chance. I don't think Bobby Jindal has any chance of actually winning. So I would hope he wouldn't run because he'll be splitting the vote with Ted Cruz. And that'll enable really bad people like Jeb Bush, someone really bad like Jeb Bush to get in, God forbid. Thank you, Surgical Jew. And now Mein Koran writes, and I quote, I actually think Bobby Jindal is more outspoken on the issues of Islam and terrorism than Ted Cruz. Do you like Jindal? Unquote. I don't know enough to say if I like him. I don't know enough of what he did on all the issues. I can't really say. I'd have to research him more. Obviously, I agree with what he said about the Muslim no-go zones. But I don't know if I agree that he's more outspoken than Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, his positions on the Iranian nuclear threat, on the threat of Islamic terrorism, his positions are pretty good for a candidate for president. Ted Cruz has taken positions that I think are pretty good. You'd have to go pretty far to go for in national politics today to go further than Ted Cruz. He has stuck his neck out and gone pretty much out on a limb on these issues. Thank you, Mein Koran. And Mein Koran, and we go to Imaknik, who writes, and I quote, can you speak about how these companies assisted Nazi Germany? Kodak, IBM, Chase, BMW, Volkswagen, Bayer, and General Electric, unquote. All of the companies that you mentioned did in fact assist Nazi Germany. There's no question about it. Kodak officials people who were very closely tied with the Nazi German regime as senior officers in their company, and they did major trade and assisted Nazi Germany technologically. So Kodak is certainly an evil company. IBM had a huge connection to Nazi Germany, really helped them extensively, and so also very evil history. Even though you have Jewish executives in IBM, so what? You know, I don't have to tell our great JTFers that Jews will often help their worst enemies. Terrible company. Chase, same story. Chase, very, very long history of assisting Nazi Germany and doing everything, and very big relationship with Nazi Germany, financial relationship with Nazi Germany. BMW and Volkswagen, the two car companies, actually used slave labor from the concentration camps to build their cars for free. They actually took Jewish slave labor and other slave labor, and these Jews were used to build for free, to build their cars, and also to help build the gas chambers, the ovens, and the other things that were used to exterminate their own people. And BMW and Volkswagen were involved up to their necks in the murder of the 6 million Jews. They actually were involved in the Holocaust up to their necks, were very strong supporters of Hitler, and shame on Jews that buy those cars. Imaknik now writes, Bayer. Bayer also deeply involved with Nazi Germany, absolutely. Deeply involved with Nazi Germany and the medical experiments and everything else, deeply involved. Terrible, terrible company that should be boycotted. And General Electric helped, again, with technology they helped run the Nazi German war machine, technologically and otherwise. And they were actually fined after World War II. They actually received a fine, which I thought was a joke, for helping Nazi Germany. So they were actually found guilty even by the American regulatory authorities. The American government found them guilty of assisting Nazi Germany during the war. All of these companies are very bad, and it shows us that in corporate America and the big corporations, anything, they'll deal with the devil himself, have no morals. If it just gives them just a little more profit, they couldn't care less. Thank you, Imaknik. Now, Da Vinci writes, which is the least Islamicized country in Europe, unquote. I think it's Serbia. Serbia is the country that resists the Muslims, or that resisted them at least, more than any other country in Europe, in my opinion. That's my opinion. Thank you, Da Vinci. And we go to Righteous Indian Gentile, who writes, and I quote, "What do you think would be the consequences if the 28 pages of the 9/11 report are declassified, and do you want it to be declassified?" Unquote. I do want it to be declassified. I think all of these things should be declassified because they expose the cover-ups of the United States government. The United States government has been covering up for Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has been involved. Saudi Arabia was responsible for the 9/11 attack. That's the real conspiracy that all the anti-Semites like Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Alex Jones, all the others never tell you about that. That they don't tell you about. Saudi Arabia, I mean, they tell you ridiculous things. They say that George Bush put the bomb in the World Trade Center and blew up the building and that the planes didn't crash into it. That's nonsense. 19 Arab terrorists did crash those planes into the buildings, and the Arab terrorists, most of whom were Saudis, were responsible for the murder of 3,000 innocent Americans. That did happen. There's no question about that. But Saudi Arabia financed that, and the senior Saudi officials were in touch with these terrorists and promoted this. That we don't want. That we don't. And by the way, the terrorists traveled through Iran as well before the attack. Iran and Saudi Arabia both had a hand, even though they're now bitter rivals. They both had a hand in promoting this. Will the 28 pages will the 28 pages, if they're declassified, bring out that truth? I don't know. I don't know what's in those 28 pages, but I'd like to see. There's no doubt. There's no doubt that Saudi Arabia was responsible for the 9/11 attack. That there's no doubt about. Saudi Arabia is a murderous, terrorist enemy of the United States, of Israel, of the Western world. Thank you, Righteous Indian Gentile. And we go to Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Discuss the whole situation with Netanyahu's planned speech in Congress and the opposition to it, etc." Unquote. Well, as I mentioned before, Tag Mechir, I think that Netanyahu is engaging in a confrontation with Obama over his right to give a speech about the dangers of the Iran agreement. Instead of, if they're all condemning you anyway, and if you're getting into a big confrontation anyway, why not get into a confrontation and be condemned after destroying Iran's nuclear bomb-making program? Let me tell you, Tag Mechir Tzedek, what I would do if I were prime minister. Everybody expects Netanyahu to give that speech in Congress, right? The Iranians also expect him to give that speech in Congress. You know what I would do? I would bomb the Iranian nuclear targets now, when they least expect it. They don't expect them to do it before the speech. They expect them in the speech to talk about sanctions and other things. Nobody expects him. If he had any brains, Netanyahu, now he would bomb them right now. Surprise attack, bomb them right now, destroy as much as he could destroy of Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. He could destroy 60, 70, 80% of it and set them back 5 years at least. Destroy most of the program, set them back 5 years or more, and set them back for tens of billions of dollars in destruction. Do that now, and then go to Congress and explain. Then I go to Congress and explain why I did it. That's what I would do. That's what Chaim Ben Pesach would do if he were prime minister. But then again, Chaim Ben Pesach is not even allowed to step foot into the country. And so what do we get? We get a prime minister who has big confrontations over nothing. And it is nothing. You know, Iran is building the nuclear bombs, and speeches are not going to stop them. Tag Mechir Tzedek now writes to Parashat HaShavua. Okay. Parashat HaShavua means the portion that we read in the Torah every week. And this week's parasha is Parashat Yitro. Yitro was Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses' father-in-law. Yitro was the chief priest for Avodah Zarah, for idol worship. He knew all the idol worship of the world, and he was the expert, the premier leader for idolatry, for idol worship. So you can imagine what it meant when he decided to convert to Judaism. He saw the miracles in Egypt. He saw what what Hashem, what God did to bring the Jews out of Egypt, and he saw the parting of the Red Sea, Kriyat Yam Suf, the parting of the Red Sea. He saw the miraculous victory of the Jews against the Amalekites in Rephidim. And so when he saw all of this, he decided to come and convert to Judaism and become a Jew. But then he decided to go back to Midian. Moshe Rabbeinu begged him to stay with the Jews, said, stay with us, come with us, let us go together to the land of Israel and stay with us. And now that you're a Jew, you're part of the people. He said, no, I want to go back to where I was. He went back to Midian. He did not stay with the Jews. He went back to his country. So he decided to be a Jew who lives outside of Israel, separate from the homeland of the Jewish people, and to be a Jew in Midian. In other words, to live, you know, to live in New York or Paris or anywhere else outside the land of Israel, and then say, you know, well, listen, I'll support the UJA and Israel bonds, but I'm going to live here and I'll be a member of AIPAC, but I'm going to live outside of the land of Israel. If Yitro, who was such a brilliant leader and such a great leader, who gave advice to Moshe Rabbeinu that helped Moshe Rabbeinu, he gave great advice. He was a great organizer. He helped Moshe Rabbeinu organize the courts and the Torah justice system. I mean, he was brilliant. Brilliant. If this brilliant, great leader had stayed with the Jewish people, he would have gone down in history, and certainly his descendants would have gone down in history as a major, huge part of Jewish history and the future of the Jews. But we never heard of him again after he left for Midian. You know why? Because Jews that leave the land of Israel, that's it. You'll never hear from them again. The ones that live outside of Israel, their descendants eventually will assimilate and intermarry and mix in, and that's the end. You have to live together with the Jewish people if you're a Jew in the land of Israel. That's the future. That's the lesson of Yitro. He went back to Midian instead of going with the Jews in the desert and then eventually going into the land of Israel. Big, big mistake. And so and despite his greatness and despite the great influence that he had, the impact that he had at the time, when he met with Moshe Rabbeinu in the desert, in the Sinai, and converted, despite all of that, after he left and decided to go back to Midian, we never hear from him again. We never hear from any of his descendants again. It's all over. That's the end of the connection. So it just shows the importance of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, settling the land of Israel, living in the land of Israel. That's why it says in the Talmud, he who lives outside the land of Israel, it is as if he has no God. He who lives in the land of Israel, it is as if he has a God. Now, if you ask me, what are all these so-called religious Jews then living outside of Israel? What can I tell you? I don't know how, you know, they make their excuses and their reasons, but their excuses and their reasons are not real reasons. Are not real reasons. God gave us the land of Israel, and he commands us to live in the land of Israel. And this story of Yitro and this parasha is just another testimony to the fact that only in the land of Israel will we ever have a future. I want to thank everybody for another program I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, shalom.